Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon, and Alateen present the 1995 International Convention. AA Everywhere, Anywhere, held June 29th to July 2nd in San Diego, California.
Come the four personalities. My name is Jacques F., and I am an alcoholic. My home group is Serendipity, Montreal, Canada. Thank you. And today is Canada Day. Okay. I'm also a free thinker. I'm not an anarchist, but a free thinker, it's slightly different, but no better. If you note in your schedule, in your program, I'm identified as a AAWS director. Don't panic. AAWS is not a new disease. It's not a new religion either. That means AA Word Services. And my title of director doesn't mean that I am a guru. I'm just a trusted servant, period. And what we do at AA Word Services, by some of us, have to manage your money, your group contributions, your assets, in the most possible spiritual way. And that's what I'm doing. Okay, we have a workshop this afternoon. It's entitled We Agnostics. The theme of this convention is AA Everywhere, Anywhere. And I would personally add, for everyone, even for agnostics. And to open this workshop, I would like to read a short passage from As Bill Sees It on page 95. When the big book was being planned, some members thought that it ought to be Christian in the doctrinal sense. Others had no objection to the use of word God, but wanted to avoid doctrinal issues. Spirituality, yes. Religion, no. Spirituality, yes. Religion, no. Still, others wanted a psychological book to lure the alcoholic in. Once in, he could take God or leave him alone as he wished. To the rest of us, this was shocking, but happily, we listened. Our group conscience was at work to construct the most acceptable and effective book possible. Every voice was playing its appointed part. Our atheists and agnostics widened our gateway so that all who suffer might pass through, regardless of their belief or lack of belief. This was not written by me, by Bill W. Our first speaker to share this afternoon is Merle E. from California.
My name is Merle. I'm an alcoholic. It's wonderful to see so many friends here and so many not yet friends, but I hope to become friends. In May, which is, the 20th of last, 20th of May, I celebrated my 19th sober birthday in AA. And that amazes me. I did not come to Alcoholics Anonymous willingly, even though I didn't know anything about AA. I got sent basically by a judge as a condition of probation on a drunk driving charge. And I was furious. I didn't want to go to meetings. I didn't want to join anything. I didn't want to stop drinking. And I certainly didn't want to hear anything about God. Not drinking was so foreign to my consciousness that it wasn't until I was at an AA meeting, because I didn't want to go to jail, for violating the probation. Wasn't until I was at an AA meeting that I ever considered for the first time in my adult life the possibility of not drinking. It had never occurred to me. I'm not one of these people that fought the battle of the bottle. I never fought it. I drank every day that I could for 31 years from the time I was 14 until finally when the judge sent me to AA, my life was completely in the toilet. I hadn't been employed or employable for almost 2 years. My third marriage had ended in divorce 2 years before that. I had borrowed and not paid back everyone that I knew. Absolutely nothing was working in my life, and I was in such a state of abject and complete denial that I did not have a clue that either my drinking or the disease called alcoholism had anything to do with my plight. I thought if I got another job, if I found another woman, if I got another car, because I totaled mine on the way in here, that those would fix me, and then, of course, I'd get my drinking back under control, as I told myself I had done three times in the past when a marriage and a good career job had seemed to crash at about the same time. But this was different. It had been going on for 2 years, and nothing was coming back together, and I didn't know how to do anything except get up about midday, go to the neighborhood saloon where I was a regular, drink into the wee hours of the morning until I passed out or made it home, and then get up and try the same thing all over again and wonder what had gone wrong with my life. I was in a state of complete confusion, complete disarray. When I first heard the term pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, I aspired to it. I had two main issues. I didn't want to become sober until after I was sober for a few days. And that happened because I was identifying with people that I was hearing talk at AA meetings. Their experiences seemed to be the kind that I had had. And it was amazing to me that they were putting lives back together without alcohol. I couldn't imagine such a thing. But alcohol had taken me to the place where it was becoming increasingly clear that there was going to be no life back together with alcohol anymore. But the two big issues I had were, number one, could this thing called AA work for me? I really believed it could not. And number two, even if AA could keep me sober, could I really fit in and really be a part of as myself, honestly? Because when I heard all this God stuff, it struck me like some kind of a superstitious religious cult. And I have been an atheist all my life, and I just didn't believe I could fit in here without doing the same thing that I had done in the bars and saloons and workplaces all my life, continue being a chameleon, putting on the false face and the disguises and waving the false credentials so that I could fit in wherever I was by being good at speaking your language and being sad inside because nobody spoke mine. Those were my issues. My first sponsor was an old drinking buddy who had been sober for 7 years, and he kept brushing aside my concerns about my atheism by saying that this was a program of experience, not a theological debating society, and that the way to have the experience was to take the actions, and that only action led to experience. And he quoted Socrates to me. He said not to worry about those people that said that this program was rooted in Christianity. In his opinion, he said it was rooted in something that was much older than Christianity. And he quoted the Socrates line, which you hear a lot without proper credit being given to Socrates: it is easier to act your way into right thinking than it is to think your way into right action. And he told me that was how AA worked. That alcoholics like me wanted to sit around and think, and then when we felt right, then we could do the thing that we needed to do. And he said they found out in AA that this didn't work. That they were going to teach me how to act right, and eventually that would clear up my thinking. I was so desperately needy for the attention and the affection that I was getting from him and his wife that I was willing to do anything that they said just so that they wouldn't throw me away, because I had no place else to go and no one else to be with at that time. And so after I'd put together a little bit of sobriety, enough so that I was feeling better, I'm talking about weeks, not months, he started getting me into the steps. And I really, really had a problem when I got past the first step. I mean, I was able to see that alcohol had me beat and that I couldn't manage my own life. That one I got. My own drinking experience had proved it to me. But that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity seemed like religious nonsense. I looked up self in the dictionary, and the word that leaped out at me as a synonym was ego. And I was able to see, yeah, well, maybe what that's trying to say is that a power greater than my ego can restore me to sanity. And I could sort of slip by that one, but the third step was the killer for me. No matter how you sliced it, they were talking about God. And no matter how you talked about God, I couldn't believe that I could relate to that. My sponsor had me do the step by rote on the grounds that I had told you. He said it's not a theological debating society. He said you take the action, then you'll have the experience, and then you can do what we do here in AA. We discuss our experience. And so feeling like a fool and not believing an iota of it, at his insistence, I even got down on my knees in front of an easy chair after carefully pulling the blind so that people miles away who had been lying in wait with binoculars could not see me doing such a thing. And I read the third step prayer out of the big book. When it was over, I did not have a flash of light or a religious conversion. And I called my sponsor so we could discuss the experience. He said, "How did you feel?" I said, "I don't know. I didn't basically feel any different." I said, "Well, maybe I felt a little relief. I don't know. It wasn't relief. I don't know what the feeling was." He said, "Really unfamiliar feeling?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Any chance that it was a feeling you never felt before?" And I said, "Maybe." And he said, "Could it have been humility?" Well, at the time, I didn't think it was so funny because how the hell do you recognize something you never saw before, you know? So that was how I got through the third step by rote, but I'm not going to kid you. I didn't think that I had really, really done it honestly as me. I still thought that there was a breach between me and the God stuff in the program that I wasn't completely comfortable with. And, well, I worked the steps by rote so that if I were to help a newcomer, I would have it to give away. I had that apprehension and that queasiness inside myself that I had been less than completely honest. And I didn't want to do that. I read the AA literature. I read AA Comes of Age. I discovered there that half the original 100 or so had been atheists and that they had imposed on Bill to modify the language in the 12 steps so that atheists weren't excluded and that the steps were suggested as a program of recovery. All that stuff. But still, I heard God, 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 and this was me, and could I fit in? One night, I had a terrible time sleeping. I would sit up all night and watch the all-night movies. I, I was very non-functional. I didn't know how to do anything sober. I didn't understand that when I stopped drinking, I was going to meet my disease. That without the anesthesia against the way reality imposed itself on me, I was not going to be able to function the way that I had functioned for 29 of those 31 years, able to hold jobs, able to meet women, able to do the things a human being did. I couldn't do anything without a drink. And I wasn't ready for that. I didn't know it was going to be like that. I felt like a child. I was in a state of almost constant humiliation. Not humility, but humiliation. I didn't know that this much was wrong with me, and I didn't know how I was ever going to be all right again without a drink. And I was watching all-night movies on TV, and tears would just run down my face, and I wouldn't even know why I was crying. I was so dissociated from my feelings. I had no idea what they were or where they came from. And I was watching an old movie from the 50s called Breaking the Sound Barrier about British test pilots who were testing supersonic aircraft. And they would build up the sound speed by going into a deep power dive to find out what happened at Mach 1. And what was happening to them was when they tried to pull the plane out of the dive and they grabbed the stick and tried to pull back on the stick, they couldn't move the stick. They couldn't pull the plane out of the dive. And the plane would continue in the dive. And they would pass out from the G's as the speed built up and the plane would crash. And they were losing test pilot after test pilot. Until one guy, one screw-up that I identified with, got in his plane and he didn't properly attach his shoulder harness. And so when he went into his power dive and tried to pull out and pulled back on the stick and the plane wouldn't come out of the dive and he couldn't pull the stick back and he passed out from the G's, instead of crashing, he slumped forward in his loose harness, far enough to knock the stick forward, and the plane came out of the dive, and he came out of his blackout. And that was how they discovered that the controls reversed at Mach 1. And it flashed on me that this was a metaphor for my life. Every time I flew, I crashed. And the more tenaciously I grabbed that stick and tried to pull it back to control that plane, the deeper and more persistent that crashing dive was. And I had no chance at all. And it came to me that if I let go of that stick and threw myself at the mercy of the random winds, I was going to significantly improve my chances. And that was how I took the third step. I took a look at my way and let go. And that's how I've been trying to do it ever since. And today, I'm very comfortable that there is no gap between my atheism and the recovery program of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the most democratic organization that I have ever had the pleasure and the privilege to be a part of. I've been involved in service for a long time, not currently, but I spent 10 years in general service, and I found that there is a deep devotion by believers and atheists and agnostics alike in this fellowship to the principles of the fellowship, and a great appreciation of the diversity that we have in the fellowship. There is room for everyone. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. And as we say at my home group, the We Agnostics group in Hollywood, California, we don't have to adopt anyone else's belief or have to deny our own in order to stay sober. We only have to want to stop drinking. And so if you have any question about whether AA can work in your life, let me assure you that it can. And I wish you all the bounty and all the pleasure of a life return that AA has given me, which I could never repay. Thank you very much.
Merle, thank you so much for this Mach 1 flying experience. Our next speaker is, well, you just take the R off, and it makes Mel D, New York.
Hi, my name is Mel. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm an addict also. Hi. Boy, this must be a mistake. I think there should be somebody else in this body other than me, because I have the feeling that... That this is all happened by some quirk of fate or accident. Let's see. It began when I got a call from my cousin a few months ago to come visit him in Los Angeles, and I said, "No, I don't think so. I don't think I'm going to visit. It's a long way. I don't like traveling a lot." Then a few months later, he said, "Listen, I have these frequent flyer tickets. It won't cost you anything. Come out and visit, and you'll have a nice time." And I said, "Well, I'll get back to you in a few weeks." And about two months went by, and I didn't call him. And he called again, and he said, "There's this AA convention, international convention, in San Diego. If you come, you'll thank me for asking you to come to this convention. It'll be the best thing that ever happened to you." And I said, "I'll think about it." I attend a meeting called We Agnostics of New York City. And at that meeting, I raised my hand and I said, "My cousin asked me to come to this convention. I don't know if I want to go. I don't like to travel. I don't." And when the meeting was over, someone came over and said, "You know, the General Service Office, someone she knows in the General Service Office said they're looking for a speaker from the East Coast to speak at the We Agnostic meeting at the convention. And so I'll give her a call if you decide to go." And I said, "Gee, maybe this is meant to be. Maybe, you know, I don't know much about this. I've been around just about 4 years. I attended the We Agnostic meeting for about a little over a year. I'm not so sure that I even know what an agnostic is, but I know." So when you're ready for your questions, just ask away. But I like the group, and anyway, I said maybe you know, some miraculous thing will happen and it'll change my life and I'll come here and speak. I was a little afraid that I knew this was on Saturday. The convention started on Thursday. What if I had one of these spiritual awakenings before it was time for me to speak? That was my big fear, and I felt I was betraying the people in my group because I don't know what I believe. I've had lots of experiences in my life that can fall under the heading spiritual. Even the word spiritual confuses me a lot. I was into something called Scientology. Well, it started with LSD. Before LSD, I figured what you see is what you get. This is the world. God is something that they made up to get us to do stuff, to get dressed on Sunday. I didn't know, or Saturday. And I just thought that it was just a made-up thing just to give us something to do, keep us in line. And when I took LSD, I found out there was something going on. There's something going on that I didn't know before, but now became the most fascinating, most interesting thing in the world. And it was some type of insight into life. And after that, I started to believe almost anything. I said, "Gee, the people that wrote the Bible, they must have somehow. I don't know." Started a quest. I was into something called Scientology for a long time. I was into, and it didn't work. There was a course that I started to take there that was supposed to be a 30-day course that was supposed to, like, I was hoping that what this course would do is, like, give me that feeling that I had when I took the LSD, see this beautiful world. And the course was supposed to take 30 days, and after 7 years of working on the same course, each time I didn't understand something, they said, well, you're doing something. Each time I had a question or I said, I don't follow this, they would tell me that I'm doing something wrong in my life. I should tell them, I write a letter to my parents, tell them they're influencing me in a bad way. And I did all these things. Anyway, Scientology didn't work. EST didn't work. I was into the Tibetan Book of the Dead was one of my favorites, and it still is even to this day. At some point in the like around 1980 or so, after being really I was almost as exhausted with my life as I've been walking through this convention hall for the last 3 days. I had an experience where I felt that the world favored me. I felt that everything was just happening in harmony, and I liked it. Did I say that they took me into a mental hospital for a little while? Because it was really, really good. And then when I got out, it was still good, but it was leveled out a little bit. And but I still felt really good, and I felt the world was on my side. I said, "This must be God. This must be God. Then this must. That's what it must be." And I realized that I had this feeling that God put this whole world here for me, for my pleasure, to enjoy life, and the happier I am, the happier people will be with me in fellowship and love, and if that worked okay. And then when alcohol and cocaine got into the picture, it was even that was even better, because I figured, gee, God put these little things like a cherry on top of the sundae for me in my life. And the way the story went was, after some years of that, I'm not sure exactly how it happened, but I think that when I started to need these things, need the drink, need the cocaine, need the heroin, that became more important than life, and everything in life became devalued. My relationships with people became devalued. Everything became worthless. And let's see. Anyway, I was in trouble. I thought that if I could, what happened to this God? I thought I had this thing with God. That I thought it was God. It was, things. Who else would have? How else could this feeling of harmony? How else could it happen? Everyone talks about God. I figured it was God. Anyway, I got clean and sober about 4 years ago, and when I saw the steps, the AA steps, I saw the first few steps, and I said, I can do that. God, I know God well. He's I got these drugs and the alcohol out of my system, now everything will come back, and I'll be right where I was in harmony with the world. And I waited a week. Didn't happen. And I waited. I went to meetings. I found that I had to attend a lot of meetings. And because I didn't really know what else to do. I was on this spiritual search. And then I just filled my life with getting high. That's all that I did. So I filled the days with going to meetings. And I always tried to recapture recapture these feelings that I've had from the past, the one from with the LSD, the one that I had in 1980. And I tried this Course in Miracles, which is I guess it's pretty popular out here. It's some kind of I don't really know what these things are there. But I know that all the people that do them all, they want the same thing that I want. They want to, like, experience the truth that there is in life. They suspect there is something real, or they know from their experience, and they're trying to recapture it. And I have a feeling that you can't recapture anything that you got. This is sort of like a temporary conclusion that a subtotal conclusion that I've come to. It doesn't happen. I thought of it sort of like a vaccination. They give you a little bit of the disease, and it protects you from getting this disease full blown. I think if you have a little memory of some spiritual experience that you had, and now you're seeking the rest of it, as long as you have that memory and you're trying to attain it, forget it. It'll never happen. Just new stuff happens. I went to the We Agnostic meeting in New York. I didn't think I was an agnostic. I believed in all the stuff. They locked me up because I was pretty sure I was God's son. Of course I believed in God. I went to the reason I attended the We Agnostic meeting is because at the beginning of the meeting, after they read the AA preamble, they read this. They said, "The We Agnostics meeting has a tradition of free expression. Here you may feel free to express any doubts or disbeliefs you have, or to share your own form of spiritual experience, or your search for it, or even your rejection of it. We do not endorse atheism, nor oppose it. We do not oppose any form of religion, nor endorse it. Our only wish is to assure suffering alcoholics that they can find sobriety in AA without having to accept anyone else's beliefs or having to deny their own. The only requirement for AA membership is the desire to stop drinking." And when that was read, I said, gee, this is a... Thank you. Merle just told me earlier that he had something to do with the composition of this note, so thank you, Merle. And I felt, this is the place I want to be. I want to hear what people's experiences are, rather than hear at the meetings that I was attending. And in 4 years, I attended thousands of meetings. And they became kind of monotonous. I heard the same thing over and over again. And every time someone spoke of their experience with God, I felt like I was missing something. Like they experienced something that I didn't experience, and I may have to do what they do in order to experience that. And everyone was doing something different, and some people had ideas of God that were nothing like mine. Mine were kind of like mystical and something. I don't know what they were. That they were, but they weren't this standard. God wants me to have tuna fish today because I passed the celery in the supermarket, and that must be what God wants me to do, because tuna salad has celery. People, I used to think like that, and that's one of the reasons I like to attend the We Agnostic meeting, because I try hard to not believe. It's so easy for me to believe stuff that when I attend this meeting, there are people they see clearly that what they believe in and what they don't believe in, and some of them are atheists, and anything having to do with this God is just forget about it. It's out of the picture. It's somebody's problem. It's not mine. That's how some people in the group think of it. And I think if I can keep my thoughts, keep myself free from trying to believe in stuff and trying to believe in a God or believe in some path to enlightenment, and try to believe that someone may have the answer in some kind of a ritual. I think I forgot the beginning of the sentence already, but I think it was when I. I not only forget the sentence, I forgot this whole topic. What are we discussing? Anyway, I think by not believing, by trying to not believe and trying to keep my mind clear, I'm opening myself up to the possibility of experiencing the truth, whatever is real. And in the meeting that I attend in New York, the air is clear in that meeting. There's no feeling of oppression. There's no feeling of what I should be doing. Most meetings, I look at the steps and I cower and I say, "Oh no!" They're telling me, "You better do this step." The curtains on the wall are talking to me and saying, "If you don't do that, you're never gonna be right. You're never gonna get it." And there's none of that in that meeting that I attend. It's just nice people. And some not so nice people, but it's real, and I think when I first attended that before, I'm trying not to use the word God very much, just because I fall for it, I get lost in it, and when I first attended a meeting, and I said, "Gee, there's more God in this room than there is in the other ones," so. Anyway, I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mel. We're very fortunate that you finally made up your mind to come to this convention in San Diego. And thanks God that you didn't have a sudden spiritual awakening that so you could share with us. Before we move on with the program, I would just like to quote a very short passage from the big book, the appendix, second appendix, Spiritual Experience, and it reads, "With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource," that could be humility, anything like this, "which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness." That's perfect. Now I have a question for you. Can a woman, a lady, be an alcoholic? Please answer. No. She must be Al-Anon. Can an alcoholic be an agnostic? Okay. Do we have in this audience an agnostic, alcoholic woman or lady who would volunteer to share with us for about 15, 20 minutes? And right now, please come up to the podium. They told me that I could have a personal gift, so my personal gift is Linda.
Hi, everybody. My name is Linda Farrell, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm completely out of my mind. If I had known when I woke up this morning that I'd be speaking before you all, I wouldn't have come down here. But I am an alcoholic, and I'm also agnostic. My sobriety date is December 20th, 1987, and my home group is the Freedom Group, which meets Sunday night in Tucson, Arizona. I think I've always known that I was agnostic, but I never really accepted it until this day. I came into Alcoholics Anonymous without a belief in a power greater than myself. And when they told me that I was going to, that it was going to be necessary for me to believe in a power greater than myself, I thought, well, I'm screwed. Because I didn't know how to do that, and I'm not sure that I really wanted to. I found it impossible to believe in something that I couldn't understand. And that's because I'm so smart, you know. But I knew that I didn't want to drink anymore because I did a lot of things and had a lot of experiences when I was drinking that I wished I hadn't had. And I wasn't sure that I was alcoholic, but I thought that if I didn't drink, I wouldn't have those experiences. So it would be real smart not to drink anymore. And I didn't know how to do that. You know, I would try that. I would not drink for periods at a time. And then I would think, well, I haven't had a drink in 10 months, and so I must not be an alcoholic. I can drink now. I remember one time I was telling my mom, Mom, you know what? I haven't had a drink in 8 months and 6 days. And she'd go, oh, that's nice, honey. And I didn't realize until I got into Alcoholics Anonymous that alcoholics, you know, people who are not having a problem with alcohol don't keep track of when they had their last drink. So I decided to come to some meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous because I thought, well, you know, I don't want to drink. I don't know how to do that. These people must know something that I don't. I'll come down here and find out what it is. And when I came to AA, I was so excited by what I saw that I was willing to be alcoholic if I could have what you got. And what I saw was people that knew how to live on a level that wasn't just enduring life, people who knew how to laugh, people who weren't living in constant fear. Fear was really the motivator in my life. Just before I came to AA one day, I was living in this great house I had designed and built for myself, had a brand new car, had a great job, had three ex-husbands. No, it was only two then. And I had two children that lived with their dad and really didn't want to see me a whole lot. And I was afraid to leave my house. I would go to work. I was sleeping with my boss, so it made it a little easier for me to, you know, kind of be a, an irresponsible employee. But I was afraid to do anything else. And I used to go out and party with people. I used to go to the bars. But in the last couple of years, I was drinking at home. And this one day, just before I quit drinking, I was at home and I was in my closet. And I'd had my house designed and built for me. It was a great little house, and it had this really neat walk-in closet. And if you get behind the hanging bag and the wall where the shoes sit on, and there was this little space that I could get in. And it didn't matter. You know, sometimes I took something to drink in there with me, and sometimes I didn't. I just needed my world to be that small in order for me to feel safe in it. And I was sitting in that closet one day, and a friend came to the door, and I never answered the door, didn't answer the phone. But a friend came to the door, and he had a key to my house, so he came in when I didn't answer, and he called my name. And I sat there in that closet, and I didn't know if I wanted him to find me or not find me. I didn't know which would be worse. And I just knew that my life had to change. And so I came to AA, and I was real scared, but I wanted what I saw, and so I was willing to do whatever it was necessary to do in order to get that. After I came to meetings for a little while, I found out that I was, in fact, alcoholic. I believed at the time that I came to that acknowledgement because I heard my story over and over. But I'm also not sure that that I just got it through osmosis. By coming to enough meetings, I think you can kind of pick it up. But I did fully acknowledge that I was alcoholic and my life was unmanageable. And then I was stuck in that void between step one and step two. And it was awful. It was almost worse than still drinking was. And I've always been a person that wanted to believe. Like was discussed earlier, I had done, you know, all the things that we do. I came out of the 60s and I was a Buddhist for a while. And, you know, I got, you know, like all the extremes. I mean, I'd like get real religious and think I should go to join a nunnery or have no need for any of that at all in my life. And so I couldn't find the place where I was comfortable, but I was told that it was necessary for me to find a power greater than myself in order for me to stay sober, and I wanted that a lot. And over, and I hated it. And I read it anyway. And then And then I found something in there that made it possible for me to believe in something that I couldn't understand, and that was the discussion about electricity. I knew that I did not understand electricity. I do not know how I can turn on my television and get TV. You know, I don't know how my car works. I don't know how men work, but... but I'd allowed them in my life. So I found that day that little key of willingness that there could be something that I didn't understand that I could use. And so that's what I held on to, and it allowed me to get through the rest of the steps. Now, I've been going to a lot of meetings. I still go to a lot of meetings. I try and get at least once a day, if not five a week. And I have heard a whole lot about God, and I have wanted to be a part of Alcoholics Anonymous so bad that I was willing to take whatever your concept of God was and make it my own. I had no idea that was going to be that profound. Track of the time for me, because I'm not. Okay. I acted as if and fake it till you make it and did the things that were suggested to me to do. I had been for a while before I got sober. I went to this church where everybody was like spiritualist, and we talked through channels and, you know, did that stuff. And so I was told at one of my very first meetings that if I continued to go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was going to see miracles. And I thought that was really cool. And I thought that whenever everybody got together at the end of the meeting, held hands, somebody was going to levitate. Didn't happen. But one time we were saying that prayer that they say, I don't know what they do where you are, but where I'm at, we say the Lord's Prayer at the end of the meeting. And I was saying the Lord's Prayer, and it's our Father who art in heaven. And I had this little... you know, hiccup in my brain, and I said, Our Father who art in heaven, Howard be your name. And I thought, oh, cool, he's got a name, you know. So I used to pray to Howard for a long time. And, I just never knew what I was doing. I never understood what any of this stuff was about. I wanted it really bad. I got married in sobriety, and I married a man that, God, are you here? I married a man that I just really, really cared about a lot, and here I am sober, and this is going to work because we know what we're doing, and didn't, you know. In fact, what I had done at 4 years sober was marry my higher power, and I found out that it's really hard to live with God. And so not only did I get divorced and it ripped my heart out because this was the man I was going to live with forever, I lost my concept of a higher power at the same time. And I found it necessary at about 5.5 years of sobriety to really look at what my values were and to really look at what my beliefs were and to stop faking it, because I hadn't really made it. I had stayed sober, but I was really struggling, and I was really unhappy. And so at about 5.5, 6 years of sobriety, I hit another spiritual bottom. And I didn't want to pray anymore, and I didn't like God because my concept of God was male. And I found it necessary for me to really look at where I had been dishonest about working those parts of the steps and where I was trading my values for yours or those other guys. And so I am still in this process. I acknowledge I don't have it. I can't tell you what it is or how to do it. I can't touch you and give it to you. But I just know that it wasn't necessary for me to believe in the God that my parents understand in order for me to be able to stay sober and in order for me to find some sanity in AA. I do pray, and that was one of the questions I was going to ask of the other speakers here, is that how do you pray when, you know, you don't know what you're doing there? But it was answered for me, I think. I just do it. I do pray every morning and I pray every night. And when I pray, I say, "Hi, this is Linda. And I don't know who you are or what you are or even if you are. And maybe I'm just talking to this mattress." But I do know with absolute certainty that I can't take care of myself. And so if there is anything out there that can, will you please help me today because I need it?
We're different, but we're not sad. Eh? She didn't like the chapter, the We Agnostics. My first meeting, I hated everything. But I bought the big book, came back home, read the chapter, and I immediately resigned from AA. Obviously, as you can see, I had to come back. We have the room for another 30 minutes. Now, it will be your turn to share with us. There is a microphone. Please line up. And we want to hear about what you think.
I've been... But,
maybe some people could remain seated.
Those guys have no chance at the bank. My name is Bill, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Bill.
Excuse
me, Bill.
You'll see by my tab.
Excuse me. Maybe about 2, maximum 3 minutes each of you. And I have to tell Linda that she has to come with me after. It's not a bad proposition. It's because I have to tell you that the speeches have been taped, and you can obtain them. But if you wish yours to be distributed, do you accept? Wow, okay. You have to come with me to sign the release. Okay, excuse me.
As I said, my name is Bill, and I'm an alcoholic.
Not Bill W.
As you see, it says in this tab, Irish Bill. I happen to be one of those, or brought up one of those, Irish Presbyterians. Believe me, they're worse than the Irish Catholics when you get to know them. But I left Ireland in 1963, and believe me, I had no time for any way of organized religion. And any God, you know. And I come through church and done all that stuff, you know. Married in church. My wife happens to be with me today. 42 years we're married, you know. And but anyhow, when I got to the program, it took 10 years. I happened to be... My birthday is this month, the 23rd. And I came into on the 23rd of July, 1973. So this month I have 22 years. I don't pray, you know, and I fought with that when I come around first. I had a hard time, like, you know, I thought, I'm not coming back to that, you know. I'm not coming back to say things. But I went around with the program, and I've always just been, enjoyed the program, you know. And I still don't pray, and I've no intentions of, you know, but I'm comfortable, I'm very comfortable with it today because of, I've just got, yeah, that's me, like, you know, I give all that other stuff up, and the thought about going back to it and listening to all the things, like, it's just not there, you know. What I wanted to come up and say, there was an article in the Grapevine, I have it here, and I have some copies of it, which I made, and it's made by, or it was written by June Ale of El Granado, California, and it's called... Listening for Reality, for the Reality. She writes a great article. It's been in the Grapevine. And if any of you haven't read this, I have some copies that I have made and want it. You'll maybe enjoy reading it. And there's a funny thing that I do say sometimes when people will ask me, you know, like, what religion are you and everything else. And I'll say, thank God I'm an atheist. Just to see the reaction, you see. But, you know, in a way that's true, like, you know. Like, I can say the word thank God in this because I was brought up that way. And I mean it in the sense that, I want to get through. But I don't believe, like, in anything. And am I an atheist or am I agnostic? Like this guy said, I don't know. I've never joined an agnostic society. I've never joined an atheist society. I joined all the drinking societies. The Moose Lodge, the Eagles, the Royal Antediluvian Order of Buffaloes. I've been a member of all those for drinking. I knew I was a drinker. I don't know whether I'm an agnostic or atheist, and I don't give a shit. You know, I'm happy with what I do, and I'm happy with the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Anybody wants this copy and wants to get it through, or if you've ever read this in the Grapevine, it's a great article. I have some sitting here, and you can have them off me from me. Thanks, it's just great to be here. And it's great to be a part and a member of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Thanks, Bill, thanks.
Hello, everyone. I'm Alan, and I'm an alcoholic and an addict. And I'd really like to express my appreciation to Jock and Merle and Mel and Linda. The panel, you've been great. I experience a power greater than myself right now. And I through you, I don't know what that is, but the big book does say it pretty clearly. It's inside us. The answer's inside us. And if it's inside me, that means it must be inside you. And so that's the only way I can experience it is by interacting with you. You may have seen me passing quite a quarterly around, those of you who don't have a copy. A group of us in Chicago, we have 9 meetings in the Chicagoland area, Oak Park, Evanston, Chicago, Illinois, for atheists, agnostics, and an implied fifth A, anyone else with a desire to stop drinking. We call ourselves Quad A. We're like the 4AF groups in Canada, and we agnostics here in New York. And we include humanist free thinkers and whatever Bill was a part of. So, but we would like to include your articles, stories in this publication. We'd like to put together, I know in Seattle they tried, and I've got some addresses in Baltimore, New York, Washington, Seattle, Los Angeles. And if any of you are part of other similar groups, please see me or pick up a copy of this, drop us a note, give us a call. We're also on the Internet, and we'd like to have a direct read. We'd like to keep those channels open as well. Anyway, thank you.
Thank you, my friend.
My name's Craig, and I am an alcoholic. And I'd like to express my gratitude to Charlie P. from Los Angeles. 5 years ago, I went to the International Convention in Seattle. I was 9.5 years sober, and there was something missing in my life. There was something that just wasn't right. You know, they told me in the beginning, if you don't believe, make believe, and I'd spent 9.5 years looking for something, and I just couldn't figure it out. I saw a meeting in the schedule called We Agnostics, and I thought it was maybe a meeting of non-believers or agnostics who had come to the program and had found their spiritual awakening, who had found God. And I went to that meeting, and I had my spiritual awakening. I found out that I was okay just like I was, that I was... The closest thing I can relate it to was coming into AA and finding out that I wasn't alone. Because after that meeting, I found out that I wasn't alone. There are many, many people in this program who, like me, are atheists. And Charlie said, and I'll never forget this, he said, you know, I get up at the end of the meeting and I say the Lord's Prayer, and it doesn't matter what the words are. I could get up and say ibbity bibbity boo. And I remember he said ibbity bibbity boo. He said that, you know, the fact is that I'm standing here, you know, with my family. I'm standing here with my people. And I think that's what it's all about for me. I'm an atheist today, and I feel very comfortable saying that. The first thing that I did was went back to my home group, and I told them I was an atheist. And all the fear that I'd had that I would be shunned and rejected, it didn't happen. You know, they loved me just like they did before. So I'm very grateful to be here in San Diego, and thank everybody.
You're great, and Your verbal sobriety is perfect. Carry on.
I'm Pete, and I don't know if I'm an atheist. I don't know if I'm an agnostic. I'm a free thinker, maybe, but I damn sure am an alcoholic. And I came here, and I went through the same routine. And through this higher power that we talk about, Junel. Are you here, Junel? Maybe not. She wrote an article in 1987 in the Grapevine called, I can remember, Is There Room in AA? And that opened up the door. I knew I was home. And so if you know June, tell her Pete from Los Angeles says hello and thanks. She wrote three articles, and I have them. I don't have any copies here, but they really showed me how to do the third step, which was a stumbling block. And believe me, it was after that easy. You work, and you take actions. And that was her to take action. And the one thing that I have against AA meetings, it's not really something big, is that in the closing, when we hold hands and just say, keep coming back, it seems so empty. So some years ago in an agnostic meeting, I suggested we close with our responsibility pledge, because I find that this is really in the true spirit of AA, to extend our hand. And I'd like to bring this up right now and let those of you in agnostic meetings decide on which way to close. I love it. Thank you very much.
I'm Matt. I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is February 7th, 1995. So I'm up here with the God. And, could you all come over to my sponsor's house tomorrow night? I want to assemble you all on his front lawn. And I want to say, I told you they exist. They exist. They're out there. And I don't know, you look like a pretty healthy bunch of people to me. So.
Yeah, speak to the mic and adjust it. Eh? It's like the notion of higher power. It's adjustable.
Okay.
You adjust the mic.
I'll stand over. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, oh, perfect.
So I said, you look like a pretty healthy bunch of people to me. So, well, I'm nervous. So I'm nervous.
Now, don't look anybody.
Okay.
Look the mic.
It's
direct in the eyes.
It says in the big book, in the chapter to the agnostic, which is the most patronizing piece of literature I've ever read in my life. It says, many of us, too, thought we were atheists or agnostics when we came to AA. And I love that, thought we were atheists, which implies that we're all wrong. And, you know, I have never told anybody who believes in God that they were wrong and I was right. I say I disagree, which is something totally different than saying you're wrong and I'm right. So, I'm still dealing with all the anger involved with the whole God thing. But you know how things work out in AA? It just works out. Everything works out fine. And then I can always gauge my progress on how angry I get at the religious part of AA. In other words, I'm starting to feel so good about myself after hating myself for so long that words printed on a page in a book, if that makes me mad, then I know I've got something else to work on. You know, it's just ink on paper. So, I went to the first marathon meeting on Thursday night. And when the meeting ended, a woman came up to the microphone and sang a song about Jesus. And I mean, Jesus was in every line. And I was just going out the door, and somebody was going to give me a ride back to my car, which was parked to hell and gone. And I couldn't sleep all night. I was so pissed off. You know, I thought, you know, aren't there 12 traditions? And isn't AA founded on those traditions? And doesn't it say we are not allied with any sect or denomination? I was so happy I hadn't heard that name in AA until, you know, I did the 90-90, I did 130 in 90, and I hadn't heard that word. I kept saying, well, I'm so glad that that word doesn't, you know, pervade AA meetings, you know. And there's some, and I don't know if that person was asked to sing that song or what, but I thought, well, I'm going to go back to that meeting tomorrow, and I'm going to find out who's in charge here. And, I want to know, but... But, you know, it's so beautiful this weekend, you know, and this is just, you know, to be sober, to be in AA,
to be at this convention and now to be in a room full of agnostics and atheists. You know, just, it's all right. Everything's okay. So, yeah, I'm glad she said that, because so I'm up to my ears with this God thing. And if there's anybody here who would like to correspond or anything like that about this particular topic, just come up to me after the meeting and we exchange addresses, and I'd love that. Thank you.
Thanks, my friend.
Hi, I'm Norma Jean. I'm an alcoholic. I was raised by an alcoholic father who's still practicing. So that created kind of my first resentment with his men. So the idea that they kept on referring to God was a man even put me further away from God. And especially when I'd gone to meetings where they kept on referring to the man upstairs, that really pissed me off. And when they referred to in Michelangelo painting God on the Sistine Chapel, and it was this 7-year-old white man, just even made me more angry. It was more like he painted God in his image. And so I was looking for God. I actually traveled all around the world to godly places to meet God. I went to the pyramids, and I went to Bora Batur, and I went to Taj Mahal, and I went to the Vatican, and I went everywhere, and nothing really touched me. And I'd gotten sober for a while, and one of the problems I had with staying sober was going to AA meetings, and they kept on referring to this to God, and I just couldn't connect with that, and I felt I couldn't get through the whole steps because I couldn't make that connection. So I really wasn't working the steps because of that reason. And I was sober for a while, and then I had a relapse, and in my relapse, I actually got insane enough while I was drinking that I made an attempt to commit suicide. But it was a very serious attempt. And I managed to kill myself. But they revived me. They took me to the hospital. I was pronounced legally dead. And I went into a coma. I was in a coma for 2 days after I came out of my legally dead. I was a flatliner. But I came out of it, and I was in a coma for 2 days and in intensive care for 5 days. And when they took me off the life support system, and I really was pretty cognizant for the first time, I looked over, and it was a Catholic hospital, and there was this little old nun in a St. Francis outfit with her little old, I don't know if you've ever seen one of those dried apple dolls and their shriveled up little faces and her mustache, and she was holding a rosary in one hand and clinging to the side of my rail, my bed, with the other, and she looked at me and she said, "Do you know where you're at?" And I thought, duh. And she said, "He must have been incredibly sad." And I thought, well, that's obvious. And then she said, "You know that they said that you were dead." And I didn't really know this, but I wanted to be agreeable because I didn't have a lot to say to her. So I said, just kind of shook my head, yes. And she said, "Well, what did you see? What did you hear?" And I looked at her and said what really happened. I said, "Nothing. It was boring. I mean, it was dark and it was boring, and it was even worse than an AA meeting that I at that time I and listening to him talk about God." And she just got into a panic, and she was clinging to the side of my bed, and she was getting clutching to me. She said, "You didn't see any white light? You didn't hear any music? There was no golden path?" There was, and I was like, no, I'm sorry. And then this priest came in and kind of said, "Sister St. Paul," or whatever her name was, we should leave her alone. And she went off and just really upset. And I laid there for, I don't know, a couple days, and I started thinking, you know, maybe I should have made something up for her. I mean, this is a woman that's devoted, obviously, years and years of her life married to an entity that she can't see and touch and probably has never gotten laid and doesn't have any more hair left under that habit. And, you know, I could have done this for her. I could have made something up for her. But I'm still thinking about going back and saying, you know, it was just, I couldn't think of it at the time. So I was really glad when I actually went from there into my 30-day recovery program that I found that it was okay in there, that I could express to people that I was an agnostic, and that it was okay. So that was my my brush with almost that near-death experience, and almost, you know, seeing what's on the other side. And then coming back and actually finding that probably the closest spiritual connection I ever did have was in an AA room that the warmest I felt, the most connected I ever felt to the universe or to other people or to anything was in that room. And as I talked to this one agnostic at a meeting, I felt, and I had expressed that to him, but I still didn't see it in a God-type form, but I was worried about still connecting with my higher power. And he said, well, you know, you can make AA your higher power. And so I did that, and that helps me every day to stay sober. Thank you.
Thanks, Susan.
For your information, we have 14 minutes and a half left.
I'll make it short. My name's Adrian. I'm an alcoholic. And I haven't really found anything that keeps me permanently out of these rooms. I keep coming back no matter how pissed off I get at something. But it started out for me last night. I was very disappointed. I wouldn't say I was angry. I was very disappointed when we ended at the Jack Murphy Stadium with the Lord's Prayer when we had just heard a Hindu. That seemed a bit strange to me. And I had just come about an hour and a half ago, come from a prayer and meditation meeting in which the content was highly Christian. And, you know, I came down here to try to figure out how to lose my financial fears. And it occurred to me that, you know, if I was spiritually correct, I might not have to worry about being in that meeting. And what I have gotten out of AA is the willingness and the open-mindedness to walk into a room like this, which I've never been in. I thought, oh, them, why not? And I decided to sit. It's the only one of these that I've sat through the entire amount of time. And this last chair was very moving to me because I, too, am one of those people who have sat and wondered, am I really only praying to the mattress, you know, or whatever happens to be in front of me? And not much to say. It's just something to think about. And I've always had to, you know, had this need to have a label. You know, what slot, what compartment does this go into? And usually that's my mind talking. It needs to compartmentalize. And I've found recently, after working the steps over again, that something emanates from my heart, from this particular part of my physical being. And that's good enough for me. And so it is difficult. I do change the words in the Lord's Prayer to, you know, higher, you know, a power greater than ourselves, hallowed be thy names. It's the only way I can tolerate saying it. Because for me, I'm a person that was like, didn't want to wear these, didn't want to be involved, didn't want to say anything, you know, I could get out of everything. And so I feel it's important to be involved, so I just change the words. So thanks. It's great to be here.
I either have to get down on my knees or raise this thing. And I don't get down on my knees, I'm sorry. My name is John. I'm an alcoholic. When I came into this program, people said, fake it. Just fake it till you make it. And I had spent 36 years of my life faking it. And I was tired of that. I wanted to get honest. And the God thing almost drove me out of this program. But luckily, I met a few people like the people in this room. And they convinced me to stay. And I found that there was something of value here for me. And I became a part of AA, and I felt accepted in it. But I have never felt acceptance like I have felt in this room this afternoon. Sorry, I got choked up. Anyway, what I wanted to do was make a request of all you people. I was lucky that I met a couple of people who are agnostic and atheist and who showed me how to work this program within my own spiritual context. I try and do that now. I'm still only a couple of years sober, but I try and do that now. And applying the principle of attraction rather than promotion, I do not hide my spiritual beliefs or lack thereof. And the people that come into this program and need God and need a more directly and classically religious program will find it. There are lots of those people out there. Unfortunately, I had to search to find people who thought the same way I did. So when you go back to your home groups, please don't flaunt it, don't flog it, but don't be afraid to say what you really believe or don't believe.
Hi, I'm Katie. I'm an alcoholic. I used to believe that if I didn't believe in God, I was going to get drunk. And that's what helped me stay sober and helped me get the second step and the third step. And for me, it didn't mean it wasn't going to be perfect. It was something maybe that I couldn't believe that I thought was going to happen earlier. I don't know. But they told me, make it what you want. It's up to you. And what I've learned through my sobriety is that it's changing. and that I don't define God. God does that for me. And that's just what works for me. And I also believe the kind of higher power that I have and that's just been coming to me, nobody gave it to me, is that God really gets it that I don't believe sometimes and allows me the space to have that and not have to pick up a drink one day at a time. And I am so grateful for that. And I don't know how I get it that God's got to do that for me, because I can't. And it's also, when I can't believe in God, it's a good orderly direction or a group of drunks. And that's what works for me, too. Thanks.
Ten minutes left.
My name is Carrie. I'm an alcoholic. And it's really good to be in a group of we agnostics again. My first experience with AA was my first meeting. There was someone that got up and started screaming, "Jesus has saved me." And all I could do was think of, what have I gotten myself into? And the only thing that kept me from standing up and walking out of that meeting was the fact that I had to shake so bad I was afraid I'd make a fool out of myself. And I sat there holding down the dry heaves and crying while someone held me. And I did not grow up in a God family. The idea of God is so foreign, has been so foreign to me, that my first meetings I went to, there was a meeting at a park. I wouldn't even go into churches for meetings. There was a meeting in the park, and it met once a week, and that was my meeting that kept me sober for a month. Then I found in the directory, I'm from Pasadena, California originally, a We Agnostics meeting, and it met in a church. And the irony of the whole thing, you know, I had to go look. And so I went into the meeting, was immediately accepted, and I heard how other people had used the program, and it occurred to me that I could use the program with my own beliefs the way I felt it would work with me, and that I didn't have to believe what other people believed. And that worked for me really well for about 3 years. And I was in a big book study group, and a bunch of real hardcore big book people came in and started saying, we have to read it as it is, and they really wanted their perspective. And they took a group conscious, and they, you know, they wanted it read as it is. And intellectually, I understood that, but physically, I could not make myself say my Father in heaven and all this other stuff. And so I felt like I was not going to be true to myself, and I had this horrible dilemma. All of a sudden, I felt like I did not belong in AA anymore, and I knew I was going to drink, because I really didn't know what else was going to happen. As it so happens, I traveled for work. I was sent to Hawaii. It just so happened it was the AA convention. I'm on the verge of drinking. By the way, I was using a mouth drop, one of those breath freshener things. I'm the type of person that always reads the instructions. For some reason, I never did. This particular thing had a little bit of alcohol in it, so the craving came back. It was the AA Hawaii convention. I went to meetings. I knew I didn't want to drink, and all I heard at those meetings was what it was like, and I didn't want that again. It made me go back and read a lot of the literature and really look at AA. I'm on the outside looking in now. 3 years sober, on the outside looking in. I didn't feel like I belonged, and you know what? It's in the literature, just like what you read. That, as Bill sees it, I found that. In the first few pages, in the foreword, there's direct reference to religion. The appendix is direct. I intellectually had to sit down and really make sure I belonged. Okay? What I'm saying is that I belong here. You guys, you know, you've reinforced me. Where I live is a really small community, and there isn't a lot of that. And I had shared at a meeting once how AA was my higher power, you know. And I had a guy stand up and scream at me that the only reason people go to AA is to find God. And so I've had some interesting experiences around this little topic, and I'm a little bit passionate, I guess, about the belief that in the third tradition, the only requirement is the right on, okay? You guys understand what I'm trying to say here. I'm really scared. But you know what? Thank you for being here today. Because everyone in here has really reinforced, I'm home.
My name is Elizabeth Day. I'm an alcoholic. The book says, In our personal stories, you will find a wide variation in the way each teller approaches and conceives of that power which is greater than himself. Whether we agree with a particular approach or conception seems to make little difference. Experience has taught us that these are matters about which, for our purpose, we need not be worried. They are questions for each individual to settle for himself. Further, it says, in the following chapter, there appears an explanation of alcoholism as we understand it, then a chapter addressed to the agnostic. Many who were once in this class are now among our members. Surprisingly enough, we find that such convictions, meaning of agnosticism or atheism, are no great obstacle to a spiritual experience. I have found for myself that my problem has not been with God, but my problem has been with my self-centeredness, my fear, my self-pity, and as Merle said earlier, my ego. That, I believe, is the root of my problem, and that I have found that working all steps, 1 through 12, has removed from me those things which have blocked me off from that power which has restored me to sanity. Whether I call that name Jesus, Muhammad, Buddha, whatever it is, there's room in Alcoholics Anonymous for all of us, even the Christians. And, I'm very grateful to the book Alcoholics Anonymous. I've rediscovered it in my 11th year, and there is room for, it doesn't matter what I believe. What matters is what I do. And if I can look at myself, see my part, and when I am disturbed by something, see what it is in me that has caused my upset, and clean up my side of the street, make restitution, do the best I can to be the best human being I can, and to be led by that higher power which I have chosen for myself, then I'm going to stay clean and sober, and I'm going to have a spiritual awakening. Whether you want to call it spiritual awakening or not, these are just semantics. A lot of it is just semantics. I want to thank the group that I got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous in Los Angeles. I no longer live there. We Agnostics in Hollywood. I love to see all your familiar faces. It's really drinking in your faces. It's just beautiful. And I want to thank my current home group in San Francisco, California, Back to Basics. And, I think I said it all. Thank you.
There would be room for a last short intervention because the workshop must end on schedule. So, you, Falk, please be seated. We won't have time. Okay.
My name's Melanie, and I am an alcoholic. And I certainly had this problem when I got here, and people said you needed to find a power greater than yourself. And I just reminded me of my stepfather, who was, all that kind of stuff that I went through. And I was afraid, but I looked around. And thinking that I was going to drink because I didn't believe in God, like so many people have the same sort of thing. But everybody was sober. I never seen so many sober people. So I had to stay. And now today, 9.5 years later, I'm okay and I'm comfortable with what I believe and with what I don't believe. And it changes all the time. And I have a great sponsor who thinks it's okay. So I'm happy with that. But I think for me, the analogy of sometimes I share with newcomers, they can't find a higher power or something, and I say, well, think of it as the opposite of your lower power, like your lower nature, your base nature. And when I was out there drinking and using, my lower nature, my lower power took me to jails and institutions and this sort of thing, and today I carry the message to jails and institutions, and that is my higher power. Thank you very much.
I have to thank Merle, Mel, Linda, and all of you. You have been wonderful. You know something? I would be ready to chair a meeting a day in San Diego for the rest of my life. It's so easy, so rewarding. Thank you very much. And according to my procedure, I have to pick up a prayer to end up, so I choose the Serenity Prayer for those who wish. God.
Thank you, Serenity, to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Thank you.